You are listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jerry Knapp.
Hello once again, Raider Nation. Welcome to another edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack, and I am joined by two-time Super Bowl champion nose tackle, Reggie Kinlaw. Reggie, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. How you doing?
Doing really well. How are you this holiday season?
Just fantastic. I'm in Las Vegas, and I'm loving it.
Well, you know, the weather's probably really good there, much better than it is here in the Bay Area, I would imagine.
I don't think so.
Well,
we're in the mid-50s.
Well, we're about to get some more rain here today, so.
Oh, okay. Well, you're talking about the rain. Yeah, we won't have no rain. We usually get the rain right after you guys get the rain. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in the news lately, there's several things in the news that pertain to Reggie Kinlaw. We'll start with your old coach. Head coach Tom Flores is a semifinalist for induction in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's the first time Tom has ever been a semifinalist. What makes Tom a Hall of Famer?
Hey, it's one of the things I like to say is about time, because you're talking about expanding coach taking two different teams to the Super Bowl. Tom was real quiet, low key. I don't even think I ever heard of curse the 6 years I was there. And he had coaches surrounding him that, you know, did their job. And he was the motivator. He was the leader. He was someone that you really wanted to play for in your period of time of, you know, professional ball. Great coach. Real offensive-minded. I mean, you know, coaching the quarterbacks. I mean, look what he did for Jim Plunkett.
And you won two Super Bowls with Jim as your quarterback.
Yes, we did. When they thought Jim was done, Plunkett came back and took us to two Super Bowls.
It proved everybody wrong. Now,
you
grew up in Miami, correct?
Yes.
How in the world did you end up at Oklahoma?
Well, at the time, I think the only team that was kind of semi-good was University of Florida. I was recruited by University of Miami, Florida State. One of the reasons I went to Oklahoma is because they used to show the Oklahoma Sooner game every Saturday in Miami. And I used to watch the whole game with me and my mom. And it was these three fellas that just lit up my eyes, the Selma brothers.
Right.
And watching those guys play, man. And I said, you know, I want to be like that. And I want somebody to teach me how to play like that. And I just wanted to go to Oklahoma.
Now, what kind of defensive scheme did you run at Oklahoma at the time?
We ran a 3-4 defense. We had my freshman year there was two Selma brothers there, Lucius and Leroy, and we had a guy by the name of Jimbo Elrod, which was a good, you know, outside linebacker or defensive end, whatever you want to call it, and some good inside backers. And, oh, man, the defense was great. And I learned a lot from them, you know, not even, you know, how to practice, you know, because you come out of high school and, you know, you're one of the superstars. And I'm not saying that I didn't practice or loaf. I didn't, you know, practice hard and I was loafing and stuff. But, you know, they brought the game into practice. You know, it was a saying, the way you practice, the way you play a game.
Right, and I'm sure, you know, even when you became a professional, there's a way to practice that's different than you know, the level you were at previously.
Right.
Now, you end up joining the Raiders in 1979, and you had a year later, a former Oklahoma teammate come play with you. In Kenny King.
Yeah, that's funny because, when Mr. Davis told me he was thinking about getting Kenny King in a trade, I went, wow. I said, you know, that would be a good move. You know, me and Kenny was roommates at Oklahoma for 3 years, not our freshman year. And we became real close friends, and he's like a brother to me. And when he joined the team that same year, can you believe we went to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, well, I do. I mean, when you assemble a great team, right? I mean, there were some other moves made that year. We'll get into here in a minute. But, you know, you assemble that team. You put all the pieces together. You make a run.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because Kenny is, you know, he think a lot. And I remember he used to wear a shirt, say, I blocked for the Heisman. We talking about Billy Sims, Plunkin. He blocked for what's his name? Earl Campbell.
Yeah, and Marcus Allen.
And Marcus Allen.
Yep.
Yeah. He's something else. But he was a great player though. I mean, you know, got the skinniest legs in the league, but you know, he was real fast and quick.
Well, it's too bad I already had Kenny on a few weeks ago. I could give him a hard time about the skinny legs, right? Now, you were taken in the 12th round of the 1979 NFL draft. Now, it wasn't too long after that. They went from 12 down to 7 rounds, and now, you know, you have that run on the undrafted free agents at the conclusion of the draft. But, you know, you were you were a 12th round pick in 79. Do you remember what that was like and what it was like to find out you had been drafted by the Raiders in the NFL?
Well, a couple of things that Ron Wolf, one of the scouts for the Raiders, I know you heard of Ron Wolf. He came down to Oklahoma, and he was told that I had two bad knees, but I also actually had one bad knee. I had surgery on my second year at Oklahoma. That's probably one of the things that hurt me. The other thing that hurt me was my size. I was only 240, 6'2", and that was, back in those days, that's not considered as a, you know, a defensive lineman, especially a nose guard. You're talking about, you know, maybe a linebacker position. The draft, me and Kenny, we was roommates. We had an apartment. And we sat around. Back then, they used to call you. They didn't have all this little roo-rah, this stuff they have right now. They used to give you a call. So we sat around the apartment the first day, didn't get a call. Second day, he sat around. I think he got a call. And I was playing basketball in the gym. And this guy came up to me, and he said, hey, you got drafted by the Raiders. I went, what? I didn't know at the time. And he told me, you know, it was the 12th round. But when he told me it was the Raiders, I was excited. I mean, because it was two teams I always wanted to play for us, Pittsburgh Steelers and the Raiders. And one of the guys I used to look up to at the Pittsburgh Steelers was Mean Joe Green. I try to, you know, play like he played. So
that's a high bar.
Yes, it is.
It was a very high bar. You know, first of all, you got to live up to that I'm a mean, nasty guy reputation, and then, you know, then you got to go out and back it up.
Yeah, that's true.
But you certainly did back it up. Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something you mentioned a second ago that I had planned on bringing up, and that was your size. You look at nose tackles today, right? The 3-4 isn't as popular. It goes in cycles, you know.
Right.
You know, some teams run it. Pittsburgh, New England, that's their bread and butter. That's their base defense. Other teams, you know, we're going to be 3-4 under this defensive coordinator. We're going to switch to 4-3 under this guy. You played at 6'2", 245, and you controlled the nose, the point, the center at that size. What enabled you to do that?
Well, I had good leverage. You know, I'm not real big up top, but my lower part of my legs, I had big legs, I, you know, strong legs, and I was a little quicker than most of your centers. So most of the time, you know, leverage was my pet peeve. If I can get a control of the center, you know, and find the ball and get rid of them, that was my game. And then most of the time, you know, we had play callings, you know, I would slant one way, slant to the left, slant to the right, use my quickness. So that's how I got away with it for 8 years.
you did have a long career at a very bruising position, especially when you're giving away, you know, 60 pounds to the guy across from you.
Yeah.
That 1980s.
Well, back in the days, I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, the guys wasn't that big as they are right now. I mean, you know, I don't think Howie was, what, 260? Lyle was probably 260, you know, 270, somewhere up in there. And, you know, today, defensive line, everybody on the line is over 300 pounds, almost.
Even some of these base ends in these 3-4 defenses are that big.
Yes, right, right.
I know Richard Seymour played right around that weight, 290, 300. Let's talk about that 1980 season. You know, Dan Pastorini comes in. You'd only been with the Raiders for a year, you know, and Ken Stabler was traded to the Houston Oilers for Dan Pastorini, 1-for-1, starting quarterback swap. And then in week 5, Pastorini breaks his leg against the Chiefs, and here comes Jim Plunkett off the bench. You guys were only 2-3 after that game. What was the mentality with the team? What was going through everybody's mind? Because you know, that's a tipping point, a turning point in the season right there.
Well, you got a leader and a veteran player coming off the bench. I think Jim was just waiting for his time because, you know, Kenny Stabler was there, you know, my rookie year. And the second year, you know, like you said, you know, he went to Houston and Jack Tatum left. And I think Dave Casper.
Yep.
No, Dave did leave.
Yeah, he did. Dave left as well.
He did, yeah, yeah. And we brought in Kenny King, and you talking about kind of like a powerhouse. We had Van Egan, Kenny King, and Plunkett, and that was the turnaround right there. You know, you bringing in some fresh face that, you know, like I said, you know, Plunkett was a Heisman Trophy winner, and Kenny, he blocked for all these Heisman, so you putting him in an offense that, you know what to do and how to win games, put it that way.
Right. Now, looking at you guys defensively, you had some superstars on the team as well. You know, you had Ted Hendricks, Rod Martin, an incredibly underrated linebacker, and then Lester Hayes with 13 interceptions on the year. 5 of them called back due to penalty. Would have had 18, would have set the NFL record forever. And he is the NFL Defensive Player of the Year that year. You guys on defense were pretty stout.
Yeah, we were stout. And that same year, Matt Millen came in.
Right.
Yeah, Matt Millen came in, and I remember when Matt came in. See, Matt was a nose guard at Pitt State, but they tried to they converted him into an inside linebacker because I remember I came in early that year, and they was trying to see if I, you know, could be an inside linebacker, but it ended up that, you know, they picked up Matt Millen, Mike Davis at safety, and – wow, Otis McKinney come in on a nickel. It was unreal. Everybody knew their role. I mean, you know, we have Willie Jones to come in on pass rush. Cedric Hartman, these guys came in on third and long. Matuzak, Dave Browning. It was a chemistry of a lot of good players in different positions that knew exactly their role, and they performed.
You know, you mentioned John Matuzak. John was one of those guys that bridged John Madden and Tom Flores, and he was a bridge to that Super Bowl XI championship. What was it like having a guy like John Matuzak on the team? Not only had he been there and won a championship, but that personality that he had and, you know, just that kind of eccentricity he brought to it.
Well, his personality is kind of similar to Lao Zeta. I mean, man, coming out of college and being on a Raider team, it had a lot of personality. You know, Ted Hendricks, different personality. John Matuszak. I was just amazed to be on the team. I was so happy to be a part of, you know, these guys that's legend for the Raiders. And, I mean, I learned so much, you know, Gene Upshaw and Art Shell and Dave Darby and Andrew Lawrence. I go on and on. And, you know, and as a rookie, you know, you come in and they sit you down, you know, and they tell you how to practice. They tell you what you need to know, and you listen.
Well, you mentioned those guys on that offensive line. Did that make you better as a nose tackle going against those guys in practice?
Yes. I mean, Dave Darby and Gene Upshaw. Like I said before, you know, it teaches you how to practice, and the way you practice, you know, it shows up in the game. And, you know, they know how to practice. They've been there for years, so, you know.
Yeah, some of them since the late 60s.
Yeah. Like Dave. I mean, wow.
Right? I mean, yeah, you look at Art Shell and Gene Upshaw had been there since, you know, Upshaw had been there since 67. He was a rookie on the 67 team. So, you know, Gene had been there through the AFL Championship in 67, then Super Bowl 11, and all the way to Super Bowl 15. And you guys go through that season with Jim as the quarterback. You go 11-5, make the playoffs as a wild card team, and the first team you got to play is the Houston Oilers with Kenny Stabler at quarterback.
Well, yeah, that was amazing playing against Snake and Earl Campbell, Mr. Earl Campbell, once again. I had to run into him again. Hey, we shut him down, though. We took care of him.
27-7.
I can give a lot of credit to Charlie Sumner, our defensive coordinator. He put us in the right place at the right time and called the right plays.
Well, that's all you can ask from your defensive coordinator, right? It's up to you guys to make the plays. Put you in the right spot, put you in the right defense, but you've got to make the play when it comes to you.
That's true.
So then you go to Cleveland, and I don't know how many cold weather games you played at Oklahoma in the old Big Eight, right? I'm sure it wasn't very warm in Lincoln, Nebraska, or Norman, Oklahoma, or anywhere else you played in the Big Eight. But you go to Cleveland to play a Browns team in one of the coldest NFL games on record, the divisional playoff against the Cardiac Kids, Brian Sipe and the Cleveland Browns. What was that experience like?
Well, thank you, Brian, for that interception by Mike Davis. That's all I can say. But that is probably the coldest game I ever played in. It was like trying to run on concrete because the ground was so hard. And all I can remember is that we won the game and I was happy to get out of there. That's the only thing I can remember because I don't even think I took a shower, man, because it was so cold.
Oh, I just
put my clothes on and got on the bus.
You know, I can't say I blame you. That was probably pretty gamey on the airplane home, though. But you guys,
yes, it was.
I'm sure you guys didn't care because you won the game.
No, we did not. No, I think I wasn't the only guy that got off the got on the bus without a shower.
Well, then you guys go down to San Diego to take on the Chargers in the AFC Championship game and talk about a totally different scenario, offense. You're playing Dan Fouts and that Eric Coryell offense. You guys jump out to a big lead and hold on as the offense held the ball for over 6 minutes at the end of the game to keep Fouts off the field. But, you know, you guys on defense, especially early in the game, made a lot of big plays to help the offense jump out to that big lead.
Yeah. Well, every time we play San Diego, you know, I usually don't play that much. we go to our four-man rush because they used to throw the ball all the time.
Right.
But like I said, Matuzak, Dave Browning, Cedric Hartman, and Willie Jones, I mean, they was getting at them. One of the defensive back, Otis McKinney, what we call our four-man rush, just got out the Fox. I mean, you know, just got out the. I mean, you know.
Well, and I think
that's all I can remember.
Well, and I think that's the other thing too. You know, we started the show talking about Tom Flores, and you know, Tom had a winning record against all those coaches of his era. You know, especially Don Coryell and the Chargers as many yards and touchdowns as Fouts threw for it, and all the guys they had on a, those teams. You know, Charlie Joyner and Chuck Muncy and Kellen Winslow and all those guys. You know, Tom had a winning record against those squads.
Yeah, and those guys, they never made it to the big dance either.
No, they did not.
I mean, they had all that firepower, but, you know, they never made it to the big dance. You know, and you give that credit to Tom Flores. I mean, you know. We picked all the right guys, you know, drafting and the free agency, and we all just clicked. I mean, there was no player that was on our team that had an attitude. We were just like a family. You know, it reminded me when I was at Oklahoma. I have never been on a team that, you know, one person thought they was better than the rest of the team. And this team, the whole time I was with the Raiders, you know, we were just like a big family. And we knew what we had to do when game time come around, you know, we'd scrap it up, 60 minutes, go do your job. Take care of your job, your responsibility, and everything will fall in place.
Well, that's a sound philosophy. Raider Nation, you're listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I'm your host, Jerry Nack, and I'm talking to two-time Super Bowl champion Reggie Kinlaw. Reggie, let's talk a little bit about Super Bowl 15. Play the Philadelphia Eagles, and, you know, they came into the game with a prolific offense. They had Harold Carmichael at wide receiver, one of the biggest wide receivers I've ever seen in my life. And I've been watching football since I was a little kid, and, you know, in the mid-70s, and, you know, I've never seen anything like Harold Carmichael. Wilbert Montgomery is probably one of the better running backs from that era nobody talks about. And yeah. Ron Jaworski at quarterback. And they had a diverse attack, and number one, you guys shut him down. But there's this great soundbite from Eagles head coach Dick Vermeil that they show on a lot of the NFL films clips, and you laugh because I know you know what I'm going to say. And it says, Dick Vermeil, wow, that nose tackle, Kinlaw, is killing us. And, you know, in the middle of a game, to have a coach, the head coach of the other team, single you out at that moment in time, I know you've seen the clip. It has to warm you a little bit to know that you were that disruptive on the biggest stage in pro football.
Wow. It was funny because I guess when we came back for minicamp, and we all gathered at the team in a meeting, and we was finna watch the highlight film of that game. And Willie Brown told me to sit up front. I went, for what? Because I haven't seen it. And we went through the whole thing, and then when Vermeil made that comment, I mean, everybody in the whole room just went, lawman, 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 because that's what they called me. But that game, my second year in the league, and I'm just shocked as everybody else. I'm blessed. I'm at the right place at the right time. And how many people could say in the second year in the league that you go to a Super Bowl and be on stage like that? And playing against, I think they beat us during the regular season game.
They did. Very low-scoring game in Philadelphia. They sacked Jim Plunkett, I don't know, six, seven, eight times. Very low-scoring, you know, very, very hard-fought physical battle on that carpet at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And you know, I always had a mentality: you beat me once, you ain't gonna beat me twice.
That's another good philosophy.
That's my philosophy. And the biggest stage where everybody's watching you. I mean, everybody. I mean, millions and millions of people watching you, and you want to play your best. You don't want to look bad. And another philosophy I have is that I want to make the first play. I want to make, if it's a run play, I want to make the first tackle. I want to make all the tackles. I don't want Matt Millen and Bob Nelson making no tackles, or Ted or anybody. I want to make the tackles, and you know, the stage was set, and you know, I just wanted to show everybody that, you know, hey, I ain't no 12th round draft choice.
Well, you know, I don't care if it was first round, 12th round, you were still drafted, and you know,
yeah.
You know, that says something in and of itself. So you guys go on to beat the Philadelphia Eagles soundly, 27-10. Rod Martin, your teammate, with 3 interceptions in the game, Super Bowl record. Kenny King, your college roommate and now teammate with the Raiders, Super Bowl record, 80-yard touchdown reception. And you guys go on to win that game. Couple of years later, you're right back in the Super Bowl in your home state of Florida, at Tampa Stadium in Tampa, Florida, and not too far from Miami. And you're in the game again. The makeup of the team has changed. You have Marcus Allen playing running back. Kenny King's still on the team. And some other, you know, you talked about it for the 80 team, right? And some names we didn't mention about acquisitions. You talked about Cedric Hardman quite a bit. Cedric obviously came over from the San Francisco 49ers, and he was one of those guys
right.
that, you know, let's bring in a guy for a couple more years of productivity. Bob Chandler came in from Buffalo
and
contributed. And now you get to the 83 team, and now you've got Lyle Alzado comes in. Van McElroy has emerged in the secondary. Mike Haynes comes over from the New England Patriots in a trade. So you got some new faces on the team. Todd Christensen has emerged at tight end, is one of the best tight ends in football. So, and this time it's not the wild card. It's not, oh, we just got in the playoffs. You guys were 12-4, won the AFC West, and now you guys were expected to make some noise.
Right. Because, you know, hey, like you said, we got all these little top-notch free agency, and we drafted, you know, Howie Long, and we had a Bill Pakel come in, and we got Charlie Hanna from, you know, he came in from New England. It was meant to be. I mean, you know, because – you talking about two years ago, we won the Super Bowl, and everybody had that taste in their mouth, like, you know, okay, you know, we got all this talent around us, you know, we got to show off our talent, and you know, go back to the Super Bowl, because you know, back then it was, you know, you played to go to the Super Bowl, regardless of what. I mean, you know, it was extra money for us. You know, we call it Christmas money. You know, back then we used to say 5 will get you 10, 10 will get you 15, 10 will get you whatever the Super Bowl was. So that was our mentality to, you know, try to get back to the Super Bowl. And then once again, we playing another team that beat us in the regular season game that we got to play them in the Super Bowl again. So, once again, here we go. You beat me once, you're not going to beat me twice.
Right, and it ends up being the same result, right? You lose in the regular season. Another close game at Washington.
Right.
Marcus didn't play in that game. And then you get to the Super Bowl. You got to play the defending Super Bowl champion, Washington Redskins, the team that did beat you in the regular season. But before that, you had the dreaded Pittsburgh Steelers in the divisional round, and then you had to beat the Seattle Seahawks in the AFC Championship game. Neither games were close.
No.
So
And then I think Seattle beat us twice too, right?
Seattle was a problem from the time they came into the league. That was the one AFC West team that gave you a hard time during that era.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they did. They personally did.
You know, they Jim sure Zorn and Steve Largent and those guys. I mean, they put a good team together, after they joined the league in 1976. You know, they beat you in the playoffs in 84 the following year. And then, of course, you had to go join the Seahawks, but, you know, that's not talking about that.
I had to do what I had to do.
I understand, but you know,
I'm gonna tell you something, boy. It was totally different, though. It was totally different. I mean, I miss my Raider fan, but I got to Seattle, man. I had my head down the whole time, but you know, I had to, you know, do what I had to do.
Well, you know, the thing about your time as a Raider, you played in 10 playoff games. In your 6-year Raider career, that's a lot of playoff games in 6 years.
Yes.
You know, you had the 4 in 1980 because you had the extra game with the wild card game. You had 2 in 82, which was the strike year.
Strike year.
Uh-huh. Yep. And you guys were the number one seed in the AFC and beat Cleveland in the first round and fell to the Jets in the second round, and then of course 83. You had the 3 playoff games, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and then the Super Bowl, and then the loss to Seattle in 84. That 83 team, when you guys went to the Super Bowl and played in that game against Joe Theismann, John Riggins, the great wide receiver core that they had good tight ends on that team, that offensive line, you know, not very often do offensive lines have their own nickname, right? So yeah. you got the Hogs to deal with. But like you said, you had Lyle, you had you, and you had Howie Long up front. Plus you had Rod Martin, Matt Millen, and Ted Hendricks behind you, and that great secondary that you had. What was that like going up against that offense?
That offense, I know you noticed, it gave everybody a lot of problems. They had a special play, Colin Trejo. Oh man, it was terrified. I mean, you know, if you didn't watch a lot of film and kind of try to pick up some of the some tips, like, you know, the stands, are they light on their hand or heavy on their hand? When, you know, you got the center, he's not blocking me, he's trying to block down on Howie, and you got big tackle coming trying to trap me. I think they ran at the first play, the Colin Trejo, and what we did, what our defensive line, Earl Leggett, suggested that I would back off the ball a little bit so I could read it better. And that was the key for me during that game. And it also was a key because, you know, you got John Riggins running full speed ahead. I mean, he was, what, 250, 260?
At least. And he was at the height of his career too. I mean, you know, he'd been in the league a long time, but he was still, you know, churning out the yards at that point.
Yes, he was. I mean, because what he did in that Super Bowl before us, I mean, you know, he had a bunch of long runs, but
obviously the famous one, the 4th-and-1 that clinched the game for him.
Right. That offense was great. I mean, you know, this is one of the best offenses we ever played against. And like I said, you know, we played them during the regular season. And, you know, you watch films, you try to pick up tips of, you know, any kind of tips of some of the plays they run. And we managed to control them.
Control is an understatement. 38-9, you know, probably one of the most genius decisions ever made by a defensive coordinator. It's well documented, but in the regular season game at Washington, you guys got burned on a screen pass by Joe Washington.
Joe Washington.
Yeah, talk about, you know, a speedy slasher that, you know, you get that guy in the open field, you're not catching him. And right. Charlie Sumner inserts Jack Squirek right before halftime at linebacker, and the Redskins run the same screen, the opposite way, but they run the same screen, and Squirek jumps the route, runs it back for a touchdown, and gives you guys basically an insurmountable lead going into halftime.
Yeah, that I was told that Charlie knew it was coming up, and my understanding was that he told Matt Millen that he was going to put Jack Squire there for this particular play. Matter of fact, I was on that play, and when I seen Joe Theismann trying to throw the scream over there, and then all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, here comes Jack Squire. I'm like, he read it perfect. I mean, you know, and, you know, Charlie told him to look out for it, and he did a great job.
You know, it was really a total all-three-phase effort in that game, right? You guys scored on defense. You guys scored on offense. You scored on special teams when Derek Jensen blocked the punt and recovered it for a touchdown. Ray Guy, you know, skying for the bad snap, saving field position. And you know, who knows how the game would have turned out then, right? Washington would have got the ball on that particular play. Have you ever been part of a game where, you know, all three phases of the game played that well in one game?
Well, I think I was probably a couple of times, maybe. But, you know, like I said before, everybody know your responsibility, and you're here for one reason, you know, to do your job. And we had a pretty good special team. Don't forget, we had Greg Pruitt, used to return kicks, came from Cleveland.
Yep, that's another one of those guys you picked up, another free agent acquisition. Yeah. I talked to Tom on the show earlier in the year, and he tried so hard to get Greg in the end zone in that game.
Yeah, I know he wanted to because, I mean, you know, that was his first, you know, first ever Super Bowl, and he got loud. I think he boo-hooed after the game because that's his first Super Bowl he was in. You know, Mike Haynes, you know, you can go on and on. I mean, it's so many guys that we picked up, a free agent that helped us. I mean, you know, it's contributed a lot to us getting to Super Bowl 18.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point you make. You know, you bring in some guys that have been on other teams and either came close with those teams and just didn't quite cross the finish line, or they had been on some bad teams and never had the opportunity to play in the playoffs or the Super Bowl.
Right, right. So, you know, hey, they just jumped in. I mean, like I said, we was a family. Everybody got along together. Everybody knew everybody knew their responsibility, and just go out there and just play to win.
Raider Nation, you're listening to the podcast, Once a Raider, Always a Raider, and I'm speaking with two-time Super Bowl champion nose tackle Reggie Kinlaw. Reggie, you make a great point, and that's the whole idea behind this show, right, is Once a Raider, Always a Raider. You know, I think the last few years you've had the opportunity to attend some alumni events. What's it like to get together with not only your old teammates, guys that you were in the trenches with and training camp and practice with, but also kind of all generations of Raider players?
Oh, well, like you say, we have this alumni weekend when we go up to Napa and watch the guys train at camp. And You see so many faces, and you try to put those faces together. And, you know, like Russell Maryland.
Yep.
I didn't even know I forgot he played for the Raiders. And I'm here. I did. I really did. And I'm sitting up there talking to him because all I can remember when he was with Dallas.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, he became a Raider, and I'm like, now, this guy got three Super Bowls with Dallas. He was all world and stuff like that. And we having a conversation, you know, James Lofton and you know, Jerry Rice. You know, you see all these guys and, you know, some of the I met a couple other guys. I can't remember their names that, you know, just recently, you know, stopped playing and stuff like that. And It's a big camaraderie. I don't think no other team in the league does anything like this. I mean, you know, Raider organization, Mark Davis and Mr. Davis always take care of their players. And this is one of the biggest things that I ever been to when we have this alumni weekend in Napa. And it's great, you know, because you get together and you get to talk and see how everybody doing, you know, how bad everybody walking and what what this and that they had done.
You can spend a whole afternoon just swapping surgery stories.
Yeah, surgery, you know, and just hoping that everybody's in good health and still with us, you know.
Right. What's really neat, too, is, you know, guys like Tom Lauterbach, an original Raider, was on the 1960 and 61 teams. You know, Jim Otto, obviously, still around. But, you know, a guy like Tom who, you know, some of those guys from the early 60s, some of them feel forgotten. And, you know, for them to be invited and for them to be able to come up to alumni mm-hmm. weekend, you know, is really big for them. Even more recent players, the first time I met punter Leo Aragues, he was just happy to be remembered. You know, the guy has an NFL record for most punts in a game. It's not a sexy record. It's 16 punts in a game, but, you know, he still mm-hmm. has an NFL record. You know, a lot of the guys are just happy to be remembered. A couple of years ago, we honored the 1967 championship team on the 50th anniversary, and, you know, a lot of those guys, number one, they'd never even seen the trophy, so that was a thrill for me to show them the trophy. And then,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because they went and played Green Bay in Super Bowl II immediately after that. So after that, they all parted company. They never saw the championship trophy. And,
wow.
Yeah. So, you know, Daryl LaMonica and you know, Clem Daniels and all those guys had never seen the trophy. And, you know, to be able to talk to those guys who – you know, these guys are the foundation of football as we know it today, right? Because these are the guys who carried over from the American Football League through the National Football League merger in 1970. And, you know, these guys, these guys are the reason, you know, pro football is what it is today. And then to
chat. What it is today. That's true.
Yeah. And to chat with you, a guy who, you know, undersized, dominated his position, and won two Super Bowls at that position. That's you know, that's what it's about for me.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Kinlaw, I understand you got to mix and mingle with the Raider Nation recently on Saturday at an autograph signing. How was that?
It's great. The Raiders have opened up three Raider Image stores here. They have one in Henderson at the Galleria, Town Square, and Fashion Show. So I done did all three of those stores, and the people out here are excited. They, you know, they're buying merchandise. I think most of the merchandise out here, it just has Raider on it. But, you know, they're looking forward for that Las Vegas Raider sign, you know. But I have talked to a bunch of people that already bought season tickets. I was told that the whole top section is sold out. From the people from Oakland. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but, you know, this is some of the things I talk. But they're excited out here. They're looking forward to it. Not only just the locals, but, you know, I spoke to a lot of people that, you know, from Hawaii, Canada, that comes out here a lot, and they're looking forward to being able to go to a Raider game. So, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, Raider Image Store, I have done. Last week, the Raiders was doing the Giving Tuesday, where they, you know, give a little to the community. You know, you have a Good Friday and that Serious Monday, whatever. So the Raiders decide, I think this was a couple years ago, we went to a couple corporation. One of them is after school program. They gave a $15,000 to this program, and then one of the other programs they gave $15,000 to a youth program, football, basketball. They have football, basketball, soccer, cheerleaders, and these young men teach these coaches how to coach, which, oh, wow. You know, you need that, because I remember when I was coaching high school and some of these kids that play Pop Warner, you know, you get to high school, you know, and they can't even get in the stands right. I mean, you know, and they don't have to tackle. So this program helps the coaches to teach these kids how to, you know, tackle the proper way and Pop Warner, you know. So, you know, those are some of the things, you know, we've been doing around here. It's about four of us, Roy Hart, Leo Gray, Chris McLemore.
Right. I know the name anyway. I remember watching
Chris. Yeah, and Lyndon King.
Okay. Yep. Former Charger. Yeah. See, another one that comes over and joins the Raiders.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, but he wasn't on that football era. And we got, you know, Knapp.
Yep, Napoleon McCallum.
Napoleon Captain. He's out here. And I can't believe I'm forgetting the most important fullback in the Raiders here. Dang, what's his name? He's going to kill me, man.
I could throw names at you. There's Frank Hawkins and...
Frank Hawkins. Frank. Yeah, Frank.
Next time we see Frank, we're gonna have to give you a hard time.
Say what?
Next time we see Frank, we're going to have to give you a hard time.
Frank going to kill me if I forgot his name, man. Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Well, but, you know, this is only going worldwide on, you know, the Raiders Podcasting Network, so, you know. And Cliff Branch is an avid listener of the program, so, you know, Frank will find out somehow.
Forgive me, buddy. I'm sorry. I love you.
So what else are you up to these days, Reggie?
Oh, nah, that's about it. Enjoying life, you know, go out and sign autographs a little bit and just taking day by day.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was nice. I got 5 grandkids now, and I visit them a lot. So I'm going back and forth to L.A. a lot, you know, visiting my kids and my grandkids.
There you go. And obviously then some big plans for Christmas.
Got my sister and my niece coming in from my sister coming in from San Francisco, and I have a niece coming in from Miami. So I'll spend some time with them during the holidays.
And I'm going to continue to embarrass you and wish you an early happy birthday, because you got one of those coming up soon too.
Hey, you not embarrass me. Hey, man, every day I can have a birthday, I'm happy.
There you go.
Every day I can have a birthday. Well, thank you very much, and I'm wishing you a safe and you and your family a merry, merry Christmas. And to all of Raider Nation and to all the players that played for the Raiders, you know, merry Christmas and happy New Year's.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. Reggie, I want to thank you for joining me on the program this week. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me, Jerry. And blessed.
Yeah, you are welcome anytime. That's going to do it for this edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. For 2-time Super Bowl champion nose tackle Reggie Kinlaw, I have been Jerry Knack, and we will talk to you next time. And as always, go Raiders.
Thank you for listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Yeah.